Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
A member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who is ready for a temperature check. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Well, Odie is giving marzipan kisses, and it's a new development, and it's wonderful. My dogs like each other, which has not been the case for the majority of the last 2 years, so I'll take it.
There you go.
But yeah, things are good. Lane Kiffin hopefully becomes the head coach of the Florida Gators. Odie is humping Marzi even though he has no balls. It's very funny. And life is really good.
Good deal. Do you want to be the last people on earth to talk about this Nixon Newell Miranda Lee's story real quick?
Yeah, I think I want to provide some interesting context, and by context I really mean question, because I want to know what was talked about before they got to the building. As my dogs fight behind me, but were they promised more and then they just didn't get it? Like, I think that's something that hasn't been broached, discussed, or maybe it wasn't even the case, but I want to know. They seem to have said no because of the lack of TV time. That's been widely reported. But were they supposed to get more than they were given? And that's why they were frustrated. Like, I'm curious about that part, because they were okay losing.
Or so they say. Yeah, I like, my opinion is, like, if you don't like the job you've been hired for and there's no contractual obligation keeping you there, then walk the hell out. You know, that's fine. Who could possibly care, basically? But, like, just the idea that they kind of try to position themselves as, like, fighting a worthy battle or something just doesn't do anything for me. Just comes off as very insincere. I mean, if you don't like a job, hit the bricks. Especially if there's no, like, contractual obligation there, which one, there certainly seems to be none with AEW and them. I don't know. It's just very silly all around. I can't imagine. It's very weird with Norm, or I keep on wanting to say Norm Nixon, because I've been reading about 80s basketball too much. Nixon Newell. You know, she apparently posted something about, like, oh, I'm barely getting booked any, but then she says she wants to retire in a year, and then this happens, and it's just very, like, I don't know how you're supposed to take this in general. Just go be happy, do your own stuff, that's fine. I just have no interest in, like, glorifying this whole situation, which seems pretty messy and not really so much on the AEW side, frankly. I mean, unless they told them that they're going to bring him in for, like, a 15-minute, you know, TV match, and that they're going to win at the end and then swerve him when they come in, which there's been no hint towards that. Maybe they got cut for time. That happens with TV wrestling, unfortunately. You know, that's just kind of part of the deal. I will say that them sandbagging Megan Bain and still getting double German suplexed gave us a hell of a clip. I'll say that. Not exactly to their, you know, something to their benefit. I do think it's very funny that like there's a story going around this with Bryan Danielson, like, hey, you guys kind of suck tonight. And it's supposed to, like, people are framing it like that's a bad thing. If Bryan Danielson tells you you sucked at wrestling, you know, and assuming that it wasn't like some super personal attack or something, that should be like a come to Jesus kind of moment, you know, like a, oh man, we must have, you know, I mean, we really did suck. Like, if I was a pro wrestler and Bryan Danielson specifically hunted me down to tell me that I was bad at it, I would feel awful. I would just, like, be so filled with loathing. But, you know, it's such a very silly story, and it seems like we're always getting just, like, these silly stories that we're supposed to care about AEW that just don't matter. Like, even on, you know, Figure Four Wrestling Online is now, you go to their AEW section, there's like a bunch of headlines, they're just like crappy clickbait, like, you know, Kyle Fletcher responds to Stevie Richards' take on Logan Paul being better than most of the AEW roster. Like, who cares? Why do we care about Stevie Richards' takes about anything? That'd be like, you know, chasing down people to make them respond to the takes of, like, Cree Rollins on modern NBA players. Yeah, you know, Martin Murcep's talking trash about you, James Harden. What do you have to say for yourself? Like, get real. You know, oh, man. What a time to be alive. Very stupid. We're in dumb hell in every way.
Couple not other even fun hell. Dumb
hell. No, it's not fun hell. It's dumb hell. Everything's dumb all the time, and it's never relenting. It's just everything's stupid all over the board. Two injury updates I want to share. First of all, Anthony Henry said that he's suffering from, it's called heterotopic ossification with his arms. I think it's from his biceps tear that he suffered in September of last year. This poor guy with these health issues he's been having, like, it's always something with him, and it sucks because he's very talented. But this is kind of it's not great. Basically, that's when you get the bone where the bone don't belong. Instead of, like, his muscle healing, you know, where the biceps is, he's forming bone there. And shockingly, this may blow your mind, Tyler, but bone does not move like muscle.
No, it doesn't. So, and if you do, your name is Kevin Ware.
And you're having a bad time. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, that gets worked out. I'm not a orthopedic surgeon or anything of that sort. I stopped with drugs. But best of luck to him dealing with that. And a very, very much best wishes to Rebel, Tanea Brooks, who's been diagnosed with pulmonary lymphoma. She hasn't been around since May of 2024, I guess. She got diagnosed with pneumonia, but just wasn't recovering, I guess. And so they diagnosed her with basically lung cancer. So hoping that she gets through treatment great. I hope she recovers fully. Just absolute best wishes for her. I don't think it's fair to do any kind of speculation on how serious it is, because there's definitely not that kind of information out there. But I just hope that she gets well soon. I mean, just absolutely nothing but the best for her. No one deserves that. So best wishes to Rebel. Other than that, we had, of course, Blood and Guts last week. We're not going to do a full recap of that, or even this week's Dynamite, because we have the heat check to get to. I will say that I thought the Blood and Guts matches were very good. I thought the men's was great. I thought the women's was a little up and down. There was a fair bit of sloppiness in it, but I thought overall it was quite enjoyable. And, I mean, Adam Page and Powerhouse Hobbs had a great match, too, as well. So I like that show a lot, but it's kind of emblematic of what AEW is in 2025 between that and this past week. So basically we got ourselves a great show when it comes to like delivering the matches they've been building to, but when it comes to the build, I think they've just consistently been very underwhelming, and this is just yet another example of that. So
yeah, I want to give a huge shout out to the women. I thought the men's from an overall perspective was better, but I thought it peaked higher in the women's match. And the one spot that will live with me forever is Marina Shafir barefoot. Just
yeah, that was some crazy shit.
Lodging all of this glass into her foot so she can kick Mina Shirakawa in the chest. One of the craziest spots I've ever seen.
Insane, in yeah.
Look, if there's one thing you can say about the AEW women's division, they give a shit when it comes to plunder, and they try. They put every ounce of possible effort into making it work, except, well, Mina Shirakawa was a little off initially, but I'll
say she was pretty bad this past week.
Yeah.
That women's tag match, like she... It was three great workers, and then Mina just like slow motion, like she was wrestling in La Brea tar pits. It was some real underwhelming stuff. I'm not someone that thinks she's bad all the time, but these past 2 weeks, it's been an oof.
Yeah, it has been. By the way, Fred, I can hear myself echoing a little bit.
So... Oh, weird. Sorry. Let me take a look here.
Okay. While you do that, I think it's really fun talking about the men's match, because I hate the idea that they always have to go out of the damn cage, and it's AEW, they always do. I thought it was really smart that this past week you had Adam Page specifically try to take out all of Samoa Joe's buddies in the ops, because, well, think about it. Everybody always interferes in cage matches when that's the whole point of it. He knows that's AEW, just cages don't mean the same thing. But I thought that they built up the finish incredibly well. Kyle O'Reilly looked like $1 billion, and being able to get that tap out with the heel hook, I thought was just awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. You took Kyle O'Reilly, who's kind of been just a comedy guy, even though he's always this really super serious wrestler, martial artist, and you almost just made him into a guy. And I don't mean a guy as he needs to be a world champion, but I mean a guy that you can now take seriously.
Yeah, they legitimized him.
They completely legitimized him, and I think that's objectively great for the future of AEWs, because hey, we're going to get behind Kyle O'Reilly for a little bit of a mini push. And this past week on Dynamite, he's got Moxley in another heel hook. And guess what? He's getting kicked and punched, and he's not letting go. Great stuff. I thought it was awesome to see. I thought it was really, really well built and really well designed. And Kyle O'Reilly feels like he's no more than a mid-carder, but he feels like a real deal. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that the stuff with, Roddy a little bit too, but with Kyle O'Reilly, I think that he's been booked tremendously. That's probably been the one highlight of this booking cycle, has been the establishment of Kyle O'Reilly. I will say that that's kind of disappointing in the context of like what should be your actual money matches. Is that the best thing you've done is build up Kyle O'Reilly? But take your wins where you can get them. I think Kyle O'Reilly has come off really well. I do have a big question about where we're going to see this go forward with Kyle, because they could very easily just turn him into like the goofball in the conglomeration. Just again, like it just seems so easy to revert to that. And it would be a shame because I feel like they've, these past 3 or 4 weeks have done a lot to revitalize him and make him a meaningful character rather than just the guy that makes weird faces in the background of Mark Briscoe promos on the opposite side of like Orange Cassidy, just kind of shrugging. But, you know, hopefully they do a little more.
You know what they should do? Kyle versus Kyle, TNT title. Yeah.
That's, I think that'd be a good opportunity for Fletcher to lose up if they're ready to do that. But then again, you know, I think that we're, you know, there's a potential that's going to be it with Mark Briscoe.
Yeah.
Though I kind of wonder about that. We'll get that into the preview. But yeah, I mean, I think the Samoa Joe, Adam Page stuff has been decent. I think at points it's been a little weird as far as like, Samoa Joe is somewhat coming off as a properly aggrieved party, and that's a weird way to book your heel in a program. I think, like, you know, stuff... I realize they're trying to do a little, like, Steve Austin kind of anti-hero stuff with Hangman, which is cool and all, but I just don't know that... I just feel like this has been a very shallow feud. Even though there have been glimpses of it being something that could heat up properly.
What I would end up doing here, Fred, is have Kyle O'Reilly face Kyle Fletcher. Not necessarily beat him. You can beat him, and if you want to do the lose-up thing, I think it's still a little too early for that because I think you should have Fletcher go on this long TNT title run and really establish himself. Then once he does lose, he's automatically going up into that world title picture. I don't think you're ready to have him win the world title because of just timing and everything else that you have going on. So I would hold off. And by holding off, you can really establish him as this dominant force. And he just absolutely destroys the mid-card. And that's why he needs to go up. But if you do have Kyle O'Reilly win, I would almost just have him be like that doofus babyface TV title holder where I'm going to defend this thing every single week on television. And then you can have some cool matches. You can have some guys from ROH come up and get a spotlight. You can do some cool stuff with like styles clashes where you have O'Reilly is much more of a ground-based technician, striker. Then you can get some high flyers in there. Like Kyle O'Reilly Ricochet, I'm sure is a match that has happened before, but I don't think I've ever seen a match between those two. Stuff like that would be fun.
Yeah, it would be.
It'd be a great way to use the TNT title. Plus you have the national title coming, which that's a whole disaster in itself, but you have a mid-card title, treat it like a real TV title and just have it defended nonstop.
Yeah, but Ricochet is really tied up losing 87 straight matches to Bobby Lashley. You can't pull away from that. More seriously, I apparently there were only two singles matches between Kyle O'Reilly and Ricochet, and they were at a 2010 Evolve show, Evolve 5 specifically, and then PWG's Black Cold Sun in 2014, which I watched and was apparently underwhelmed with, and only gave it like a 3.5. But yeah, that I would like to see that match. But like, I don't know. I mean, what do you think the builds have been going well on AEW TV, or do you, or are you with me where it's just kind of like, I mean, it's not bad by any stretch, but it's just kind of heatless, you know?
Yeah, I think heatless is a really good way to frame it. This just isn't a good television company right now. It's a good in-ring wrestling product company. And they need to figure out how to make it a good television company. I don't know how you get back there. Because at one point, this was such much-watched TV for us. And we were so much more enthused about the product than we are now. And that's because of how they've handled their television. They just have not handled it well.
Yeah, it's they seem to... I think they've kind of shifted to, well, WWE is popular, so we must do whatever WWE wants to do. And it's kind of like, well, if you're going to be you talk all this talk about being the challenger, you know, brand, you know, you got to differentiate yourself. And I feel like they're just doing a lot of like my guest at this time style promos. It's all very samey and it feels safe. And like, you can't be safe. I'm not saying like book Crash TV or anything, but it's just still like, there's no kind of sense of chaos or anything like that. It's just, yeah, you know, you should be able to do more, but well, here we are. I feel like this is the same thing I've been saying for a few months now. So anyways, I don't have much else to add. I thought this week's TV was kind of it was back to being like what Dynamite has been and Collision has been. I mean, I thought it was a pretty mediocre Collision that third hour, but I think Dynamite's been very much like, yeah, there's some pretty solid matches, you know, 3.5, 3.75 star matches, nothing great, and no real strong angles. I guess the strongest angle in the show would have been, you know, I think the Hangman Page promo after beating Shibata was pretty good. And I mean, the Don Callis stuff throughout is all right, but like, there's just a lack of real drive for any storyline to feel big or hot or anything other than just like treading water. And it's so frustrating because there have been points where this company has had great storylines and had things going. And look, as much as I talk about like liking great matches and I write about the FSM50 a lot and all this stuff, you know, you got to have some juice too, and you got to have some emotion going, and there's just nada in this company right now. It's just nothing. And it stinks. And you know, I think it's to follow up that great Blood and Guts show with this kind of Dynamite before pay-per-view. I mean, I think the pay-per-view buys will be in the normal range and everything. I'm not going to like, this is where the promotion dies, any kind of nonsense like that. But like, it's really underwhelming. And it's, you want to grab Tony by the shoulders and shake him and tell him to, you know, put some ass in it.
Yeah. They need to figure something out, man. They really do. It's,
yeah,
so incredibly frustrating to watch this company that used to be really awesome, and it still is awesome, but it's not awesome in the same ways it used to be.
Yeah.
It feels like lazy television booking, and the builds aren't nearly what they could be, but you have these gems of pieces of the rivalry, pieces of the build that are like, man, this is great stuff. Something I could really sink my teeth into.
Joe and Paige should be a great storyline.
Yeah.
And it ain't. And like, I think it takes a little effort to make it not be, you know, because those two should be able to put together a great storyline in their sleep. And instead, we just kind of got, well, you know.
It just kind of exists. It exists, yeah, in the plane. There's nothing special about it. It's also, man, it just sucks, man. It just sucks.
It's very sad. It's very sad. All right. So I actually have a proposal for the heat check that we change it up a little bit, because I feel like our last however many has been very much like, well, this storyline hasn't been great, but this match will be pretty good. I feel like we say that 10 times.
Okay.
I'm going to go through. And let's, like, do you want to talk about, like, the build more in depth for some of these matches? Or do you want to, like, how do you want to approach this time as we do a live production meeting?
Fred, it's your idea to change it up. Lead the way and I'll follow.
All right.
I'm good with whatever.
Okay. So, well, let's go ahead and knock out the pre-show. Let's do that real quick, because three of these matches are just present. So first of all, we have Hook and Eddie Kingston. By the way, speaking of like heatless, like the return of Eddie Kingston is like Hook's my little buddy is nothing. It's nothing's going on there. But they issued an open challenge that is answered by Anthony Henry and JD Drake of the Workhorsemen. We also have Max Caster and Anthony Bowens against Bang Bang Gang, Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson, and Big Bill and Brian Keith, and the Outrunners, all in a four-way tag team match for $200,000. Helpfully, someone on the Full Gear Wiki page has linked the dollar sign in 200,000 to the Wikipedia page for the U.S. dollar. So thank you to that. Well, but we're 100% in, like, I'll save that for a second. And then finally, we have RPG Vice of Rocky Romero and Trent Beretta against Boom and Doom of Big Boom AJ and QT Marshall. With Big Justice, of course, and I can only hope the Rizzler in the corner. That's three-fourths of the pre-show, and I think it's pretty fair to just say that these are just matches that exist.
I'm sorry, RPG Vice with going against Big Boom AJ is going to rule. It's going to be so
fun. Oh, yeah, they're going to do so much heel bullying and stuff. Like, it'll be great, let's be clear. But, you know, it's also going to be like 7 minutes, and then, you know, the baby faces will get the shine, and it'll be fine. It'll be like a three-star match.
It's going to be just classic, traditional pro wrestling, something that you see on WCW Saturday Night, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it.
All of these Big Boom AJ matches are perfect for a pre-show. It's fun, it's cool, it's different. It's just classic pro wrestling bullshit. And I mean that in the best way. See, even Odie and Marzipan are getting amped up about it behind me. Like, I love watching Big Boom AJ matches because it just feels refreshing. It's a palate cleanser of all the other bullshit that you get, and it just reminds you of a better time where you could get this kind of stuff regularly watching Mid-South, Mid-Atlantic, Jim Crockett Promotions. I love it. Plus, the in-ring work, solid. They're always between like that 3 and 4 star range. They're always just good.
I feel like that's very kind to Big Boom AJ, but go ahead.
You know what? At the worst, they're like gentlemen's threes because the work is fine. It's a little clunky maybe, but it's not bad. He knows how to apply holds. He knows how to perform power moves. He's just 50, a little bit out of shape, and doesn't move around well. Like, the effort's there. He tries. And
he does work like he does work like he should be a regular at the local VFW rather than on a pre-show for AEW. I will say that it is old school pro wrestling skill and money like he does, because God bless him. Look, I think he's fairly entertaining. It's not a diss on him or anything, but I am going to say, like, whatever he's getting paid is too much because he ain't drawing anything.
Yeah.
And it never made a difference in any financials, but, like, he's fun to be around. It's not my money, so what do I care?
I don't know the world of TikTok very well, so I'm not going to say, like, I'm any kind of expert, but AEW thinks that paying this guy whatever they're paying him is worth the extra exposure that they get on TikTok. And I'll give Big Boom AJ credit. When he does promotional stuff, he, like, promotes the shows better than most wrestlers. Like, just does a great job of saying exactly what you're going to see, exactly what's going on, what day, what time, what location, how to watch it. He's fantastic at that stuff. So I'm guessing, like, if a regular wrestler that you would hire outside the company is getting, like, let's just throw out arbitrary numbers because I have no freaking clue. Let's say they get $5,000. Maybe they think giving him $10,000 is more worth it because they can get some of that extra stuff on TikTok. And you know what? If they think it's worth it, even if the monetary investment back isn't, but you get extra exposure and they think that more exposure down the line will turn into paying customers, I get it. Does that mean it will work, or it's you have consistent metrics to back it up? No, I don't have that answer. But Big Boom AJ has been a great ambassador for this company. So whatever value he brings, they think it's worth it. Unless I see numbers saying otherwise, I'll side with them because they keep bringing them back. And you know what? It's also limited, Fred. It's like, what, 3 to 4?
Yeah, no, it's nothing to get mad over. It happens like 4 times a year, and it's fairly entertaining. And I just, like, the money that is being spent is certainly not, you're not getting that return on investment. That is entirely what I'm saying. That's all.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? You may not, but they feel with whatever numbers Chris Harrington has whipped up, that investment is worth the extra exposure on TikTok. does that mean that they're getting that money back? No, but I kind of get it. At least this guy is a trained professional wrestler.
Yeah.
Shout out Big Justice, though, because that dude has a good spear and he's 12.
Yeah. Thank goodness the second most important professional wrestling company in the world is getting exposure on TikTok.
Look.
I'm sure that'll put the butts in the seats any day now. Any day.
Reminds me that I need to be posting my Vikings First and Skull stuff on TikTok. One, I can't because I'm a non-compete. Two, my producer hates it because it's a Chinese-based company, and he's a like a 30-year Air Force veteran, and he's got a lot of qualms about it.
I can understand that.
He also worked with like digital engineering kind of stuff. Like he's a very tech savvy guy. I mean, he's over 60 and he's my producer. So he's like, his qualms are pretty founded. Like they're not conspiracy theory bullshit. So yeah, my wife thinks, oh, you should just be on TikTok. I'm like, I don't use TikTok. F that. Plus I kind of can't. So.
So the last match for the pre-show that I want to spend a little more time on is Don Callis' family of Okada, Takeshita, and Hechicero against Místico, Máscara Dourada, and Neon for the CMLL World Trios Championship, which is an insane match to have on the pre-show.
Don Callis' family, let's go.
I would be super hyped for this if it weren't for the fact that Dorada Okada this week stunk on ice. This is a real bummer of a match. Just absolutely nothing going with it. So normally I'd see these six on a match and I'd be like, yes, I'm up, but I'm a little concerned about how this is going to go with it being a pre-show match, and they're probably going to do a finish that is Okada and Takeshita having issues, but hopefully we'll still they'll get 15 minutes. I would love for them just to get 15 minutes just to do what they can, and fingers crossed.
I don't know if it's ever happened, but please have this somehow turn into an Okada Místico main event in Arena Mexico. That's all I want.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would love that. That would be great. Obviously, you know, Okada would be great in that environment if he's trying, but then again, remember how he just kind of was like on the big AEW in Mexico City or Arena Mexico show.
I wonder how much of that ended up being shtick and it just transferred too much to the effort. Oh, Marzipan, I know. I was very disappointed with Okada too, but you go against Místico, he's going to outshine the fuck out of you. You better bring your A game.
Yeah. I just worry that we might get Shrug Okada. You know, that's kind of the concern I have. All right. So we're getting to the main card now. I love that one of the entries is just the Casino Gauntlet for the inaugural AEW National Championship with literally no one announced for it. We do have announced entrants. I should correct myself. It's Bobby Lashley first, then Shelton Benjamin second, but also you get Ricochet, Kevin Knight, and Mike Bailey. These five people will never be separated. I can only hope we also get the Gates of Agony, and that's just the entire match. Just like we just get a really lame. It's technically not a rematch kind of thing, you know.
Here's my theory on this. I think MJF comes back and wins this fucking belt.
I'd prefer he be in the world title picture, frankly. I don't know if they're going to do... Do you think they're going to do Joe and Paige for another month? Or do you think this is going to be the blow-off in the steel cage?
I think this is going to be the blow-off.
Yeah, because that's what I assume, but...
Well, okay, so Wrestle Dream is kind of like your throwaway pay-per-view. Similar to how Vengeance and Judgment Day were always throwaway pay-per-views in the old WWF. Now, I think you're going to have World's End. It's going to be treated like a bigger deal. Wrestle Dream has just kind of existed, especially since they took it out of the Pacific Northwest. It's a fine show. You're going to get 100,000, 110,000 pay-per-view buys, but that's it. And I think World's End is where they're going to put their focus. which I think is arguably the smart move. MJF, I think, would be a really good choice for that, for like the next challenger. But I just have this feeling that it'll end up going like this national title. They'll put it on somebody big to really establish it. MJF just feels like a guy that could establish it, but maybe he just wants nothing to do with it, even like an in-character thing. I don't know. I really have no idea what you do with it. Just do something interesting and fun. Mark Briscoe, if he wasn't in the TNT title match, would be a great choice.
Yeah. I mean, what they could do, I guess, is have Briscoe beat Fletcher and then have Fletcher come into this and win the national title.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Especially because I like this gauntlet. It can literally end at any time. Yeah. All it takes is one pinfall or submission. That's it. And I love that because it has an element of everything matters and you're not just waiting. Like Blood and Guts, you have to wait till all 10 people are in there. The Royal Rumble, you have to wait until all 30 are in there.
Yeah.
You have to wait. This, nope. It can end right now. Oh, okay. This is sick. I'm watching high school football state championships right now. And it's Wisconsin Division II, which is their second highest. West appears up by 7, and it's fourth down at their own 1-yard line. They run a fake punt for almost 50 yards.
Hell yeah.
I love high school football so much. But yeah, to transition back to wrestling, just do something fun with this national title. And I'm excited for the gauntlet. I think it could be really, really good.
Yeah, I hope it's fun. They tend to be that way, but I feel like the last couple have been kind of lacking. And fingers crossed we get something decent here. All right, on the undercard, away from the title belt. So we've got the $1 million trios match. So more of Tony Khan's money mark matches, I guess. Kenny Omega and Jurassic Express against the Young Bucks and Josh Alexander. I think that'll be a very good match. I feel like we're teasing this Young Bucks face turn kind of thing. And I just wish that, I don't know. I feel like it's maybe going a little too long. But I also just have no real interest in Jurassic Express. Like Jack Perry burnt a lot of goodwill with his really bad heel run in AEW with me. Especially after having a pretty nice start early in New Japan. So I can't pretend that like I got bells on for this match, you know, like he's got a lot of work to repair his reputation with me, I'll say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I like Jack Perry in a tag team setting. I don't love him as a singles guy. There's something there with him still, but I don't think it's been unlocked, and I'm starting to worry that it never will be. And to me, that's a big problem, because if you have all this unfounded potential, if you never realize it, who cares? It does not matter.
I hate to use this terminology, but it's the most sports terminology I have. At that point, you're just a bust. You're just the high draft pick that never panned out. And you're a Minnesota Vikings quarterback.
I hate you.
I hate myself. I think that's just the thing with Jack. It's just like, okay, are we going to actually ever be as good as you're supposed to be? And I think he's a decent worker, but I think he also just is really not, he just hasn't delivered. You know, when he needed to, and that's brutal. All right. So I don't think we're going to get the babyface turn here, which makes me concerned that we're going to go like 3 more months before the Bucks eventually turn face. So we're just going to get them making mopey faces while Don Callis is in his 7th segment of the show. Look, I like Don Callis, but maybe we need a little less Don Callis. I'll pose that. Maybe the fact that we're putting Don Callis wallpaper all over the show is kind of hiding all the mold that is on the booking walls, if you will. Just paint over it. It's fine. Can't hurt you if it's painted over. Okay, so we also have Darby Allin versus Pac. This presumes Darby Allin's available, which I assume he is. But I mean, you know, Darby did very Darby stuff. Made a bunch of Darby-level decisions in that Blood and Guts match. And is coming right back a week and a half later to wrestle possibly Pac. I think that match could really roll. I'm excited for that one. I think the Death Riders have... And, like, the best parts of AEW Creative have basically been Death Riders, and they have been Don Callis' family. They're not perfect. I think that the Don Callis family just kind of being heels and not going anywhere with that is a little frustrating. Like, I feel like they're just doing the whole, we're bad guys. Oh, have you done anything about that? Not really. We've just kind of pick fights with Mark Briscoe. And that's about it. And I wish that there was a little more to sink your teeth into with them. But anyways, that's besides the point. And then we got John Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly. And we kind of already talked about this. But I'm pretty hyped for that one. I think that may be the match I look forward to the most right now. Because, yeah, I think that they've done a lot of good work with that, with, you know, Moxley, you know, Kyle O'Reilly kind of being like, okay, I'm going to stop doing goofy faces in the background of segments, and I'm actually going to become like a real evil technician kind of worker, you know? Like, obviously not evil, not like a heel, but like, you know, some real physical, intense stuff. And I think it's a great combo with Jon Moxley, so... I'm hopeful for this match. I hope they get a lot of time, and I think they'll both work really hard. So cautiously optimistic, not even cautiously. I am optimistic for this match. Just fingers crossed we get the best possible version of it. It's also going to be no holds barred. So I think we are getting a bit of a like pre Jon Moxley is turned on by the Death Rider storyline going on here. It's not going to be here. It's not going to happen here, I don't think. But yeah, I'm excited for this.
I am too, man. I think Darby versus the Death Riders kind of has overstayed its welcome.
Like you had a great blow off and then you just kept going. And I feel like that's kind of a bit of a persistent issue with AEW right now, is this things are just going a little too long.
Yeah, it's been a constant that they've done that for a long time. Once you have the blow off, it's done.
Yeah.
Like they've already powerbombed Darby through a flaming table.
Off the entrance tunnel.
You've already tried to drown Darby.
Yeah.
Done choke out spots, all this stuff. Come on. Like,
I don't want to sound like Jim Cornette yelling about garbage wrestling or whatever, but like there is a bit of like what's left, you know? Like,
yeah. What is left? I don't know.
You know, it's and Darby's going back to face Pac. I mean, like, that's like beating Bowser and then going back and like, oh, actually, we've got another one of those airships from Mario 3 for you to worry about, you know?
The Mario 3 reference was awesome. Yeah, there's something to that, Fred. And
just weird pacing. AEW's got a lot of weird pacing going on right now. We also have the women's tag match, the Babes of Wrath, which is Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, versus the Sisters of Sin, Julia Hart and Sky Blue, the Timeless Love Bombs of Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa, and then the unnamed Megan Bain and Marina Shafir in a four-way tag match where the winner chooses the stipulation for their semifinal match in the Women's World Tag Team Championship Tournament. I figure that of all the different ways to do kind of a we're treading water for a week kind of match for this tournament, this is probably the best versus like just a really uninspired 4-on-4 match. Yeah. It does kind of call into question, why do we need stipulation matches in the tournament? This feels a little like, you know? But, I
in theory, it's stupid. You don't need a stipulation match. However, I want to see where they go with this, because the idea could feel stupid, but the end result could end up being awesome. So,
I mean, I'm not that off. You know, what are they going to do? Like, Yeah, well, I just can't see like a real surprise coming out of this. So it's going to be like, oh, the you know, maybe Bays of Wrath win and they choose a hardcore match, you know, or possibly a Falls Count Anywhere or a No Holds Barred. You know, I just feel like we're going to get that. It's going to be like, okay, all right, fine. You know, and it'll make the bet, well, the resulting match better. But
yeah. You are probably right, Fred. But I want to see what happens.
Now, if they choose like a 60-minute Iron Man match, one, that could potentially be a disaster. And two, I would like to see what kind of disaster that is.
Yeah. I think that's a very, very fair point. Also, I really like some of these teams in theory. I think Willow and Harley is a really fun idea for a team because they contrast each other so well. I love the Megan Bain Marina Shafir team because
that's worked out better than I thought. Because I know you really like Megan Bain. I think she has some skills. I'm not trashing or anything, but like she is also not a finisher. You know, she's not
24.
Yeah, like she's stupid young. I'm not like expecting her to be, you know, Manami Toyota in here. 27. Yeah, so a little further.
She's 27. Okay, she's older than I thought. But even so, 27's not old.
Yeah.
And
Marina Shafir isn't bad. She just, you know, has never been... I've never thought she's been great. Or even good, really.
She's perfect in a tag format. Because, mm-hmm. one, her singles work is kind of boring. And once you get to, like, that 8-10 minute mark, it really falls off a cliff. But
yeah.
If you have her in for, like, 3-4 minute stretches and then you tag out, especially as a heel, I think she's perfectly suited for this role. And I will say she's done a phenomenal job of kind of rehabbing what we thought of her.
Yeah. Her I have a much better impression of her now than a year ago.
Her Death Rider stuff's been great.
Oh, she's been, I would say of all of them, she's been the one that's benefited the most from the Death Riders by like a humongous margin. Like that's been a great decision to put her in that group.
Her and Yuta, because Yuta's heat is nuts.
Yeah.
He's getting real heat. And whenever they decide to pull the trigger on Yuta, I think it could really work.
Let me ask you a question here. You know, my presumption is that the Death Rider storyline is going to be eventually everyone, you know, them all getting tired of Jon Moxley losing and turning on him. And I don't know how soon that's going to be. You can drag that out another 6 months if you wanted to. You could do it in 2 weeks. You could do it on Dynamite if they get, you know, you do the angle where they like get really disappointed that he lost to Kyle O'Reilly. Hell, they could do it Saturday. Who do you think? Yeah, my presumption is if that angle happens, that basically the Death Riders will continue on with a new heel leader. My concern is I don't think that there's anyone clearly set up to be that leader of this group. Claudio and Pac are both great, but like I don't think either of them really has the mic chops necessary. Although I think Claudio is a good promo. It just doesn't feel like he's ever going to be slotted in that kind of spot in AEW. He's always going to be like the lackey, essentially. And Pac is gone like 3/4 of the time, you know, not entirely his control, but still. And like Yuta's, you know, are you going to put Yuta in that spot or Daniel Garcia? I mean, I think it'd be great to elevate one of them like that, but I just don't know if they're
fucking balls.
I'd be interested, you know, at least it'd be a swing. I feel like that's been a problem with AEW. You know, I keep bitching about it, but like they aren't taking swings. They're just up there taking pitches every at bat, you know, like try to do something for God's sake.
I think the one argument you can make for Yuta, and this does not mean it will work because you don't have a large sample size of data, but if you're going to take a swing, Yuta's heat has been nuclear.
Yeah.
Just, you know what? Go with it. The fans have already told you they bought into Yuta being a little fucking prick. So roll with it. Go with it. And you know what? If it doesn't work, pivot. It's okay to be wrong when the crowd says, hey, we're buying into this. But then, hey, maybe like it's like the Becky Lynch, Kofi Kingston thing when those two and Rollins won the titles at WrestleMania and then everything cratered. They wanted to win. Maybe the crowd will just want to turn on Moxley and then they don't care about Yuta anymore and they just want Mox. Maybe it's something like that.
Yeah.
But you got to try. You put Yuta with Moxley and Danielson for a reason because you think he's got something. Have some balls. Go for it. Just go all out.
Yeah.
And Moxley should turn babyface at some point anyways, and I'm very curious how he and Kingston would interact. The fact that Kingston's been kept away from the Death Riders, to me, is very curious.
Yeah, the fact that they've done, like, relatively so little with Kingston since he's come back has really like impressed me, and it's not good.
They're treading water.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think he should, if this is all he's going to be doing, like, why bring him back, you know?
Probably still under contract.
Well, no, I mean, just, like, keep him on the bench for another month or two and be like, okay, listen, we're going to wait for insert storyline here rather than just have you come back and be like, hey, Hook's my buddy. We're going to do, like, just random tag matches that don't mean anything. Kingston, I feel like, should be doing more, you know?
Dog, that's all. I'm not arguing with you there.
Yeah. Mark Briscoe, Kyle Fletcher. If Briscoe loses, he has to join the Don Callis family. It's a no DQ match for the TNT Championship. I don't really want to see Mark Briscoe as the 17th member of the Don Callis family. He's not happy to be there. I just don't have any interest in that. Like, I think that we're starting to get to the point of, like, just too much Callis family. And I'd love to see them actually do something. And I guess that Takeshita and Okada is going to be mainly that something, but it feels like that they aren't in storylines that move otherwise. They're just in, like, oh, we're the antagonists, and we're just kind of doing stuff all the time, 18 times on a show. And I just need a little more direction with them. But that's kind of an up-and-down complaint. This match will rock.
It will rock.
I can't wait for it. It'll be fantastic. I just hope we don't get like, here we're going to do a bunch of WWE-style comedy segments where, like, oh, Briscoe's getting told to do stuff he doesn't like by Don Callis, and he's making pouty faces. Like, I don't. No one needs that, man.
I think Briscoe finally wins. I
think great. That's,
yeah,
I hope so. I'm not optimistic because I feel like the AW's booking is like just boring WWE booking, like, I don't know, 2016 WWE, when like they stopped being interesting and just kind of were like, oh, Vince has brain worms. you know, level stuff, which isn't a great comparison. If you're getting compared to like extremely late stage Vince McMahon booking, maybe you should. Well, the only difference is that AEW is not changing their mind every week, but the overall, like, we aren't doing anything interesting stuff is kind of there. Okay, let's get to the three top title matches. We've got FTR against Brodito for the World Tag Team Championship. This should be a much bigger deal. I feel like FTR has kind of been left to not flounder, but like they've just been like, okay, you're over his heels now. We're not doing anything with you this pay-per-view cycle. Like, these guys should be cutting promos every week and, you know, just being a big deal, you know?
Yeah, I think they got really overshadowed by what's going on with the Hurt Syndicate and whatever the hell you call Ricochet's group. I never remember.
Oh, the Demand.
Yeah.
What a bad name. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's just very flat, you know. Yeah. Anyways, I digress.
They just got overshadowed, but I think FTR should be the tag team champions. And they should go on a big run. And
yeah,
they should use this to try and put over a couple of younger acts. I don't really know who you would put over as a younger tag team unless you're going to finally give Top Flight a big push, which I don't know if they're ever going to do because Darius kept getting hurt, and I think their momentum just got completely screwed. And then Dante had that huge leg injury in that that ladder match for ROH. So, but I mean, those guys are only like 28 and 25. So it's not like they're old. But FTR, I think this is going to be their temple tag team title run in this company.
And I would love for that. I'd love to see them really get a big, big moment. Random note here, but Wikipedia still does not have a page for JD Drake. Like, that has really? To be like a decision just to not give him one because of some reason. Just absolute refusal. I don't know. It's bizarre. But J.D. Drake does not have a Wikipedia page. Anthony Henry does. Everyone else on this card does. But J.D. Drake, Wikipedia hates you, I guess. There's probably some weird story there that I would just love to hear. Women's World Championship, Mercedes Moné challenging Chris Statlander. I like Statlander in the ring, but I gotta say, after her performance on commentary during that Moné match this past Wednesday, I don't know, man. Like, I worry that she's just never going to have that personality to be a top person. And so I'm kind of like, just put the belt on Moné, you know, let's just stop. Let's just do it, you know. But Stat's great in the ring, you know, and it's, she has great presence, but, you know, she just doesn't, she just never sounds good on the mic to me. Like, the best she ever did was when she was with Stokely. And boy, did that end abruptly. But, like, you know, I think if you pair her with a manager and have her as a heel, it could work really well. But that's the last thing this division needs right now, is her as a heel and yet another turn for her. So, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I feel like Stat's just kind of another example of, like, a prospect they have that has been exposed as having a massive weakness. And I think it'll cause issues long term. Am I being too harsh here, do you think?
I don't know if you're being too harsh, but the big one for me is they don't really know what to do with Stat. And I think that's causing a lot of confusion with the fans, because she had that little weird flirtation with being a Death Rider.
And it was a great blow off when she, like, flipped off Moxley and everything. And then it was just like, oh, well, you know, she's the champ now. It's like, all right, well,
she's just kind of directionless. And it's wild that she's directionless.
Another one.
Because she pinned Tony twice clean.
She's your Women World Champion, and she's directionless.
You had Tony after arguably the best women's title reign in company history.
I don't know if you need to put arguably on that, man.
You had her put Chris Statlander over twice clean. And you have no idea what the hell to do. That, to me, surmises exactly what AEW is. They build things up to a fever pitch. They hit it great. Statlander had a little bit of momentum, but then she also had none at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what to do.
Had literally no follow-up plan. I don't want to sound too much like Joe Lanza here and be like, oh, they've got too many people in the back. But, like, you know, you do hear stories about all these people backstage and these agents and everything. And you're like, all right, but what's the direction for these people? Like, anyone on your roster, like,
yeah,
you know,
what is Chris Statlander? Like,
do something, you know, don't just sit there. Wrestling booking is kind of like a shark, you know. There's the, I don't know if it's apocryphal or what, but apparently I've always heard that if sharks stop swimming, they'll die. And because that's how they breathe, apparently. And I feel like wrestling booking is pretty similar. The moment you stop, like, having things happen and you just become kind of a product in stasis, like, that's really damaging, I think. And I feel like that's been AEW for a few months now, and they really need to just, like, do stuff, you know.
They,
like,
really,
that's my big through line here,
man. They missed them
and MJF too. I mean, they need more Kenny Omega. Like, they kind of have Kenny Omega back, but he's not around a lot of the time. And
I mean, I say this with all due respect to Kenny Omega, he's done.
Really? I he still gets good reactions, man. I don't know. I can't agree with that.
That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean.
Okay.
He's going to pop up. He's going to have, like, a match. But as a consistent presence on AEW television, I think it's over.
Like, you just think his heart's not in anymore?
No, I think his body's not. I think with what his style is, I think he's a special attraction wrestler now. There's nothing wrong with that. He's going to pop huge. The fans are going to love him. His matches are going to be great. but there's going to be no consistency. And we've seen no consistency from Omega for years. Some of that with the diverticulitis stuff. I just think the era of Omega is over and it sucks, but it just kind of is what it is. When you have that kind of style, you're going to just run out at some point. Like, well, how many matches has he had since the Gabe Kidd match in January? Three?
I will pull that up. It's been more than that.
It's not a lot.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's like 50 by any stretch, but like,
I bet it's single digits.
Let's see. He has had 13 matches since then.
13. Okay.
Yeah.
It certainly feels like a lot less. How many of those in Japan?
Zero.
Didn't he have the rest?
They've all been AW events.
Was that, that was this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was at Wrestle Dynasty on, at the Tokyo Dome, and that's been...
Oh, that was an AEW event, that's right.
Well, that was in Japan, so I'm counting as that, but everything else has been an AEW event.
Yeah, it's... I just feel like what we used to get from Omega, where you'd have a consistent presence on television, you'd have relatively consistent matches. I mean, 13... in mid-November is not a lot. It's more than I thought.
No, it's
I
not. Thought it was like it six, definitely isn't. Six.
But
I mean, like, I feel like it's also very... I can't get with you on saying, like, he's done as a big match wrestler, considering what he's had this year. Like,
No. I didn't say done as a big match wrestler. I think he's now a special attraction wrestler, which means he's going to do his big matches. But
okay, well, he's basically been doing, like, a big match a month. Just about, you know,
man, I'm gonna have to admit I'm wrong, but it has not felt that way.
Here, I'll lay it out for you.
On the way for long stretches.
All right, so January 5th was he? No, I agree with that. It's the disappearing in between is kind of a problem. But he had the Gabe Kidd match on January 5th, February 15th. He had the tag with Ospreay against Takeshita and Fletcher. Early March, he had the match with Takeshita that Meltzer gave 5 stars. He also gave the last one 5 stars. And then April 6th, he had that great three-way that I gave 5 stars to with Mike Bailey and Ricochet. There was, at the end of that month, there was a great 8-man tag where he teamed with Jet Speed and Mark Briscoe against the Young Bucks, Ricochet, and Okada, which I thought was really good. Probably one of the weaker matches on this list, but still great. And then end of May was Anarchy in the Arena. June, there was the four-way with him against Dorada, Claudio, and Brody King. We had the Omega Okada rematch in July. August, we had Lights Out Steel Cage. September, we had another great 8-man tag with Jet Speed and Adam Page against Alexander, Fletcher, and the Young Bucks. October 1st, he teamed with Brodito against Alexander and the Young Bucks. And then October 15th, he teamed with Jungle Express in a pretty good match against Hechicero, Josh Alexander, and Mark Davis. And it's either that or the Brian Cage match that are probably the weakest of the year for him. But like, now I'm not going to say like literally every single one of those is a huge match. Like that last one wasn't exactly, you know, they're hanging from the rafters to watch that, but like he's working a fairly regular schedule. It is that he like disappears for 3 weeks in between those matches sometimes. I would definitely point to that being an issue. But
look, I'm gonna have to eat crow on this because I'll be straight up.
I don't think your overarching point that he's somehow not been focused on enough is a problem, I think, with him. Like, he's in pretty important matches, but, like, there's just no build in between them with him a lot of the time. I feel like that is something of an issue.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I love Kenny Omega. One of my favorite pro wrestlers ever. Kenny Omega, I had heard the legend of Kenny Omega. I'd heard he was really good. I had never watched like New Japan or anything before the Omega Okada one. Mm. And then all of a sudden I saw that because I had heard of Omega, but I'd never heard of Okada. Like, this is incredible. Then I heard Jericho versus Omega, and that match was my jumping off point for New Japan. Like, as a full-time watcher, and that kind of changed my life a little bit for good. Yeah. I miss that Kenny Omega so much, and I know we're never getting it back. And it just feels like Kenny Omega is a lost relic of what AEW used to be. He still pops up, but it's so infrequent, and he's not a focus. And in turn, it's almost like he's not a draw anymore.
I understand where you're coming from.
The vibes are way different than what the actual data tells you.
Yeah. I think the problem is that, like, there's just not enough cohesiveness with his presence. And I think that hurts long term. With, like, just how much juice there is with his appearances.
Yeah.
I think that's a big issue. All right, we got one last match to talk about. Samoa Joe against Adam Page in a steel cage for the World Championship. I think that we got Adam Page hinting at, I do believe, the Swerve Strickland match in his, when he was like, look at what I did the last time I was in a steel cage with someone, which, look, if we're getting that with Samoa Joe, buddy, let's go, you know? But, I think this could be a really good match. I am not going to sit here and predict, like, a 5-star classic or anything, because we're talking about, you know, Samoa Joe in the year of our Lord 2025, and that has its own limits, right? Mm-hmm. Because he ain't what he was in 2008. He's still very good. Never pretend that I will say anything or otherwise, because he's Samoa damn Joe. But, you know, I do think, like, there's going to be something of a ceiling here. I'd love to see him exceed that. I just don't know if Samoa Joe's going to work his ass off to get there, you know?
Yeah. I love Samoa Joe. I voted for him for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. I think these two could have a 5-star cage match. I really do.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but I wouldn't bet money on it.
I'd give it like +300 odds, and I'd probably take him, because okay. I really think a motivated Samoa Joe with how good Adam Page is with Plunder, sky's the limit. But it also could just flounder and just not work. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think it'll flounder, but I think it'll be like 4.25. You know, it'll be like, well, that was, you know, that was fun.
It all depends on what Joe is willing to do with his body.
Yeah, that's always the big question with Joe these days. I mean, again, I love him. He's still great on the mic. He's still great in the ring as a presence. But, like, you know, just as an example, the last, excluding the last Anarchy in the Arena, the last Samoa Joe match that broke the 9.0 barrier on cage match was the three-way with Styles and Daniels back at Turning Point 09.
Damn.
Yeah. If you go to 8.5, it's basically, excluding like an Elimination Chamber and a Royal Rumble, it was the Darby match back in 2023 the No Holds Barred one on Dynamite. And then you go back to like the 2019 Elimination Chamber, and then a 2017 Royal Rumble or SummerSlam, sorry, four-way with Strowman, Lesnar, and Reigns.
I'll say this. Then
before that, you go back to the you know, Daniels and Styles three-way.
When I die and I go to heaven, one of the first things I'm going to ask is, what happens if Samoa Joe was booked properly for the majority of his career?
Boy, I get why people want him in the Hall of Fame, and like, I'm not against it. I'm not voting for him right now, but I'm not like going to look at you like a crazy person. But like, God, he is the greatest hypothetical professional wrestler of all time. You know, and just the sense of like, imagine he's like on the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers. Like, imagine what they would have been like if, you know, they had bookers that knew what the hell they were doing. Up there with like Paul White when he was, you know, jumped to WWF. Who else? Brody Lee. It was just particularly tragic. Like, he's in that class. Where it wasn't something that, like, it wasn't an injury or something that derailed their career. It was just, like, the wrestling industry is filled with idiots, apparently. And unfortunately, you're going to suffer for that.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, I mean, look, I'm looking forward to this card. It'll be a good one. I'm not going to be able to watch it till Sunday because I'm going to get some brownie points with the wife and take her to a movie. Imagine, I would never would have said that in 2022. I would have been like, oh, sorry, we're not watching that movie. It's tough, but we got it on Blu-ray. And this, you'll be all right with it.
Saturday or Sunday?
It's on Saturday.
Okay. Well, I will be, I may have it on in the background, but I have to watch Florida, Tennessee because one,
it's Florida, Tennessee.
It's Florida, Tennessee. Two, I'm getting paid to watch it. And three, I hate Tennessee more than any singular like being in sports or anything. I hate the Volunteers. I hate Rocky Top. I hate everything about them. And this is sports hate, not like hate. You know what I mean? I can't stand Tennessee. So,
Handshake meme here. Predator handshake. Let's talk a little college football real quick so I can ask you, hey man, what happened to Florida against Kentucky?
Oh geez.
How that happened? Because I couldn't watch it. And I messaged you before the game. I'm like, hey, congrats on your upcoming 27-6 win. It's like, yeah, I can see it. That's what's gonna happen. And no, it did not.
Kentucky won 38-7.
How do we score 38 points?
DJ Lagway, that was the manifestation of a really, really bad season for him, a really, really trying season, because he like didn't get to do a lot of like the normal like growing development kind of stuff, because he was first dealing with a shoulder injury, then a hernia injury, and then a calf injury. He didn't fully practice until like the week before the first game.
Yeah.
And you could
and the wide receivers were all out like the entire spring, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. Trey Wilson had like a non-contact injury, and he's now out for the year with an ankle. True freshman Dallas Turner missed a bunch of fall camp with an injury, missed the first few games with the said injury, and now he's out for the year. Vernell Brown, the third, who's been really, really good, he's been out for the last few games. It's the injury report to start this week had 20% of their scholarship talent on it. Let's put it that way. It's been a really trying year for injuries, for growth and development. But what's really interesting is they had 19 commits going before the Billy Napier firing. They still have 19 commits.
Yeah, that Napier firing did not hurt anything, amazingly.
And only one player has opted out to preserve his red shirt.
Yeah.
So it's been a really weird year, but they've been really competitive against good teams. If turnovers were the only reason they lost to LSU, they lost to South Florida because of their own stupidity. They beat Texas. They lost to Georgia by 4, arguably on a terrible call. They lost to Ole Miss by 10. And they had the ball with 3 minutes to go down 3. Like, this is a good football team that has shot themselves in the foot constantly and it has had a lot of things not break their way. It's just been a trying year. If they get Lane Kiffin, all will be good because he's going to probably keep a bunch of that recruiting class. He's going to get some of his own guys. He loves the transfer portal. But this team has so much young talent where you don't have a lot of open spots that you're desperate to fill. You're filling because there's talent available. And I think this team could be in the college football playoff next year if DJ Lagway comes back healthy and gets some practice time in the offseason.
Yeah. I think that he could still be like a great quarterback, but he ain't one right now. I will note real quick that Kentucky plays Vanderbilt this weekend in what will be undoubtedly a stupid game in some way. And the shutdown forecast was only kind of joking when they said that it was the premier SEC quarterback matchup of Cutter Bowley versus Diego Pavia, just like we all drew it up.
I'm not going to watch it. That dude rules.
What a dude. What an absolute dude. All right, that's it.
I have one more college football shout out.
Yeah.
Shout out to Maction and the University of Buffalo for having a meat raffle on Tuesday night. One of the coolest college football things I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was good. Oh, man. great.
But yeah, that is our show.
Yep. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed it. I hope you all enjoy the show this weekend. And I hope that maybe my pessimism about AEW booking will be improved. I'm not optimistic on that because I'm being pessimistic, but fingers crossed that we'll get some good stuff coming out of it, because I would love to, like, you know, restore the feeling, you know, that bullshit. I would like to see this company be back to, like, good creative, or hell, even interesting creative. Say what you will about the Bruchachos, but it wasn't boring.
Yeah.
There's I'm not wishing for a return, but at least it wasn't boring.
True that.
That's all I got.
I'm going to watch Kansas and Matnerville try to beat Orono in the 4A state title in Minnesota. And they are running the triple. God's offense. The triple option.
I'm sick Tyler. Of behavior.
He's Fred. Have a great night. Happy Take Thanksgiving.
Care, yes, happy Thanksgiving. No show next week because we got stuff to do. So yeah, I'll try to
go drinking.
I will try to do a pay-per-view recap Monday, I suppose. I'll figure something out. But there'll be a show up for that.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.